Hi, this is Amir Anzor. I'm with Charis Santilli, who is a one of the world's leading life coaches. She's based out in the Bay Area in Northern California. She's really had a phenomenal story herself on getting her life into balance and taking it to the next level. She's in her late now 40s, so she's lived that life. She was a valedictorian, successful high achiever. And then she's going to tell us more about her story. And I really found it fascinating. And so, Charis, tell us about your story of how you got to this point today.
Thanks so much for having me, Amir. And happy to share. As you mentioned, I grew up and was definitely, I like to say I was born with ambition. I mean, that's how it feels to me and what my life has looked like. My parents were entrepreneurs, so I got to watch them build a business from scratch that started in our kitchen. That was like my, early like my junior high to high school years, and it was pretty phenomenal experience. So I, of course, modeled after them in going for all the accolades I could in school, and then went off to college. And I came home to, we were celebrating my dad's 50th birthday with a hot air balloon ride, and we had a beautiful ride, except something went terribly wrong when we came into land. And I have a longer version of the story in various places on my website and other places, but I'll tell you the very short version here, which is that we literally had a crash landing. And my father ended up rolling out of the balloon in one of our landing attempts, and his neck was broken, and he became paralyzed, a quadriplegic. And I'll tell you a little tidbit of a story that's a sweet moment in this tragic experience, is that when we landed and we ran over to him, he was conscious, but just not moving. And we were grateful he was still alive, though, because it was very, very scary situation. And when they rolled him over and he looked up at me and saw me in complete hysterics, I was about to turn 19 years old. I'm his little girl. That's my dad. And he looked horrible. But he looked at me and he said, "You should see the other guy." He made a joke to try to calm me. So he was physically paralyzed, and my mom and I became emotionally paralyzed quickly in our own ways and found our own coping mechanisms. And for my mom, that was alcohol. And that helped her avoid, feeling her feelings and all the tragedy that ensued, not only from his paralysis, but losing things. They literally lost everything over a handful of years, including their business. And then we ultimately lost her. It's coming up actually on the 10-year anniversary this coming Thanksgiving. I don't know when this will air, but Thanksgiving this fall, to liver failure due to the alcohol. Now, that was her coping mechanism, and it eventually got the best of her. My personal coping mechanism was to just amp up my ambition and get super busy, stay super busy. And that turned into also workaholic. So that kind of addiction for me, that helped me avoid feeling some feelings, but it didn't make them totally go away. They caused challenges, and that behavior caused challenges ultimately over time, physically and mentally. And yet it's an interesting one because our world tends to give pats on the back and accolades and applaud going for, being a high achiever and working a lot. And, whether you're a business owner or starting a business or you're high up in the ranks of a company, that tends to get praise. And so it was a definitely a tricky one for me to climb out of, in the sense that it seemed like it was a good thing to do. But eventually everything caught up with me. And fortunately, certain things happened that led me to meet a life coach at a business event, just it serendipitously. And I realized something just pulled me to start working with her. And then, you know, fast forward, that was about 11 years ago. And I found that not only did that those experiences in her private coaching and group programs help me to completely change how I felt, to face things that I'd buried, and to really create a life that was so much more fulfilling, I found that I wanted to do the same for others. So I flipped my career and literally found a way to exit a prior business I had and go into coaching full time. And so now my focus is in life balance and in transitions. And that's what I, how I help other people.
Amazing. And what was that, that life coach did with you that changed your life around? What were the aha moments? What were the points so that if someone's listening and going through a similar thing, they have that same breakthrough that you had over, you worked with her for a few years, right?
Quite a bit over pretty intensively over about an 8-year period. And so, and that was between, and I still work with her in certain ways, but that was a pretty intense period for me. To answer your question, I would say it was a lot of, for me, it was a lot of baby steps, because when you're being coached, it's all about how ready and willing you are. And as I can look back on it now and reflect and see my whole journey, you know, I was able to have the ahas only as far as I was willing to and ready to really, let me rephrase. It's not so much having the ahas. It's so much that I was able to integrate the ahas and the insights only so much as I was ready and willing, because it's easy to have the ahas and insights, like reading a book, listening to a podcast, and things make sense. And you're like, oh, that makes so much sense. I get it. But to embody that and integrate it and to rewire your brain is a whole different scenario. So she founded Fearless Living, and that's what my coach training is. I'm a certified Fearless Living coach and trainer. And underneath it all is understanding neuroscience and how our brains work. And so when, for me, some of these patterns and thoughts and behaviors were so ingrained, I like to describe it as like a superhighway. I mean, like that's, my brain was just so used to going that way and living that way, that for me to carve a new trail and have that become the new superhighway over time, you know, it took some time. Not that it has to take ages for everyone, but it was these moments, little steps, consistency, and showing up, me showing up to the calls, willing to do the work, willing to think about it and process it in between, practice new ways of being, practice do exercises and stuff. All simple things, ultimately, yet being willing to do it. So the biggest things that I learned over time were, it's so important that the coach is basically holding space when you're like, when your confidence is lacking, or when you're not quite sure about taking a leap or doing something, or facing a feeling that's scaring the crap out of you and you've buried for ages, that coach is there to hold the space for you to be able to do that and feel safe and do it in a way that is not going to, what do I want to say? Do it in a way that just that you feel secure and able to move forward. The coach is holding space for you to have forward movement in your life. And also very much, at least in my training and what she did for me and what I do for others, is learning to trust yourself in a whole new way. Because there's this, I think that a lot of us think we trust ourselves or we think we're confident, but then if we really sit with ourselves or what's keeping us up late at night, the truth is we probably don't really trust ourselves. And we have this little thought of something we want to do, but we're like, but that's not what our culture says is okay for me to do. How dare I limit my time to that? How dare I say no to that? How dare I say yes to this? You know, and so that trust and that confidence in reality, even though we're high achievers and we look like we got all our act together and we're making things happen, what I found is that what's keeping us up at night and what is getting in our way is at the core a lack of true self-trust in what we really want and changing our life to get what we really want, and true self-confidence that we can make that even happen. So then we stay in our loops and stuck in our situations and having the same conversations or arguments over and over, and having a certain external world, but having a disconnect with how we feel inside. That's what I talk about with balance, by the way. Balance may or may not have anything to do with changing anything externally, but it definitely has a lot to do with changing how you feel internally. And that's what I work with people on. It's about managing their emotions.
So how can you be more confident? Because, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I come up with these ideas and I think one day I'm very high. I'm like, yes, this is going to be amazing. It's going to change the world. It's awesome. It's innovative. And then an hour later, I'll remind myself that I made so many dumb mistakes before. And I thought this other idea was going to work, but it never took off. And then I'll remind myself of all the times that things didn't work out. And is it like, can you be too arrogant? Or I do see it, because when you are all in and you have that self-belief, you make more things happen. And when that self-doubt, what you help people do is get rid of that self-doubt. Is it good to have that self-doubt, or how can you control that?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for being honest and, you know, sharing with us what's actually going on with you, because I'm willing to bet everyone listening can relate. So the self-doubt. So first of all, I would say it is about getting rid of it, sort of. But to be honest, it's more about what I like to think about is all the voices in my head and the voices in your head is getting them to quiet down. So they're not right here, right next to us. They're not in the like driver's seat of our life, or, you know, kind of taking the steering wheel and trying to take over. Instead, I like to think of it as over time, getting them to like move to the far back room. You know how when you leave a room and you walk far enough away and the door's shut and there may be a loud voices in it, but it's just muffled. You if you focus, you can hear it, but it's just more muffled and silent, more in that backspace. That's how I like to think about that self-doubt and those basically the inner saboteurs, your inner critic, your inner judge, and the part that is coming up and saying and reminding you of all of the reasons why what you want to do is, you know, is crazy or is not going to quite work. So first of all, just to clarify, we don't completely get rid of that because it's connected with part of our brain that's keeping us safe and alive. The challenging part of that is that that part of our brain is not evolved with us. So what it thinks is keeping us safe is everything about our life right now. And you have these moments where you're able to kind of sneak outside the lines of your current comfort zone and have these ideas and be excited about something new. And then this part of your brain is like, wait a minute, that's something new and scary. And unfortunately, it thinks it can't keep you alive if you go there. Like it doesn't see the difference between that and caveman days and having a bear nearby that could harm you, your life. So we have to counter that. And there's different ways to do that. I also love modality positive intelligence. I'm also a positive intelligence trainer, and I've woven that together with my fearless living training. And to give you an example, like in those moments when you feel that self-doubt or and these voices crop up, what can really help to bring the rest of your brain online and settle yourself back to a calm state that knows you're safe, it's okay to have these thoughts, and then be able to think about what you really want to do, should you take a step toward that direction or not, but not be ruled by fear, because that's the self-doubt is connected with a fear. Ultimately, that's what's going on. So for example, I'll give you one exercise that you can do. This is from Positive Intelligence. You can focus on one sense for at least 20 seconds. If you can do a couple minutes, awesome. But even just starting with 20 seconds in these moments. So I'm talking about like focusing on your hearing, like what hearing a sound far away, what's the furthest sound you can hear, the closest sound you can hear. Can you hear your own breath? Like just really focusing on just that one sense, shutting your eyes if it's sound and if you're not driving a car. And then touch is another one you can do. So like rubbing two fingers together, you can try that right now too. Again, if you're not driving, if you're in a place to do that. And if you shut your eyes and rub your two fingers together, super focused, can you feel your fingerprints?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you just super focus, you kind of shut down all the other senses and if you focus so much on that and feeling those fingerprints, you can kind of settle some of those voices and get that to quiet a bit. You can do it in many other ways for touch as well. Even just thinking about feeling your feet on the floor, your butt in your seat. You can do this with any of your senses, even visual while you're talking to someone, super focused on certain things that you can see. But the point is you're getting hyper-focused on one sense. And this has been proven to change what's going on in your brain in that moment. And so it's really beneficial. It's essentially like when people get into a meditative state, they're essentially doing this kind of thing. But this is a quick way to get there in a simple, short period of time. And then the more you practice something like that, the more you can re-engage your full brain and not just be run by this super logical side that's kind of teaming up with the fear side and coming up with all the proof of why your idea is crazy or dumb or it's not going to work because of A, B, and C. And you're like, wait, but I'm okay. I'm just thinking right now. I haven't done anything. Can we just dream for a minute and brainstorm? That's pulling in the right side of your brain that's more expansive and it's creative and it knows you're safe and it knows that you're connected to things that are calm and peaceful. And you can find that too in any moment because it's most likely not a life-threatening situation in the moment. Most of our doubting moments and fearful moments in our day are, you know, they're not really going to harm us. And yet we've got to counter this survival mechanism inside of us. So it takes practice, but that's like one example of one exercise that can be done.
And what are some of the fears that a lot of your clients have? Like, what are some of the most common things that people come to you with, and how do you help them solve that?
So I would say some of the issues tend to revolve around letting go of control and trusting that things are going to be okay. Like if they delegate more, get more support, ask for more help, instead of feeling like they have to do everything themselves. I have one person I spoke with yesterday who in this last year has found a lot more a feeling of balance in his life. And I just met him and he's like, he's so happy he's found this feeling. He feels so much better in his days, the way they're structured, how he feels literally moving through them, how his priorities are, all of that. And he's going through a big transition and he is fearful of having that balance go away and go back to the way he was, which was definitely in more of the workaholic realm and busy and super intense most of the time, that he's now felt what it likes, what it, he knows what it feels like to not feel that frenzied busyness and gotta work. And he doesn't want to lose that. And first of all, it's important to note, you can never go back. I'm not going to say you can never have your patterns come back. I'm saying you can never be the person that you were because you know more now. And yet your patterns can come back. I've had that happen to me. Yes, absolutely. So you can have your patterns come back and start doing that and kind of, and yet you are still constantly moving forward. And I was actually hearing something this morning, a podcast, YouTube video that I was listening to, talked about relapse in any kind of relapse, and the concept of it usually maybe dipping your toe back into something, but will you go completely all the way there? Most likely not. It just depends on the person and the situation. There's usually always still forward movement happening. And so, you know, I can hold the space for him to know you've come a long way. You're different than you were when you were that person. You can't be that person again. You could have those patterns come back to you now in a certain way, but it's going to feel differently. You've changed your brain more now. Let's have some faith in that. And let's catch the signs of it before it takes you over. And so that's one example. But in general, I mentioned for sure control is an issue, and kind of a fear of slowing down and a fear of like, well, if I'm not staying in this zone, how like, am I worthy? And because my work, my job, my role, that's gotten confused with their identity and purpose. And we're like, you know, untangling that and being like, no, you can have a purpose and identity that is separate from your role as a business owner or an executive. You are worthy as a human being. And how do we convince you internally of that? Because that's what I found to be a very common theme, is this mixing up of these things, where they've gotten so enmeshed that it's taking over and ruling many people's lives. And what they say is their priority in their life, and then what they're actually doing are two different things. And then that's why they're feeling discontent, because when your values don't match your actions, you feel the conflict inside you. Because if you have these true core values at this certain time of your life — our values change, by the way, as we go through our life — but whatever your core values are in this moment, if you aren't living in alignment with those, then you feel that's a core reason you're feeling off. And so it's a matter of getting these things to come back into alignment and how you feel. And a lot of it is literally paying attention to how you feel and starting there.
And that's excellent. I mean, what I found, you're based in the Bay Area in Northern California. And I found, as you know, I'm 46 years old, and I found that since my early 20s, when I did my first startup, and so my business identity has been a big part of me. You know, like, whether if I was not being successful, I would feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. If I'd made a bunch of money or, you know, hired some great people, I was like, yes, I'm on top of the world. And you're right. Like, I feel my identity changing even now, like family and those parts of it are more important than they were maybe even, you know, like 10 years ago, or even last couple of years. I was like, what am I doing? And what I find is there's difference in culture. How do you find that across the world? Because you're in a place where a lot of people want to change the world, quote unquote. And I'm in Europe, or in, you know, originally from Pakistan, where people have accepted the world more. I feel like that there's not as much desire. Like, you know, you get in that rat race, they call it in the US, where you're like, oh, I must do this. I must be president. I must become a billionaire. And so there's always that chase. And this is what capitalism loves, right? Is chasing that next thing. So then you produce more and you make more money and you create more wealth. How do you find that as we go on in our lives? Do people catch on to say, I don't need to change the world and I'm okay? Or is that good to have it because that drives change and the economy?
Yeah, I like to, the more I've learned, the more I've come to, I try to practice not labeling things as good or bad, because there, I think that they can be both. And I think there's a lot of paradox in life. And there's paradox in capitalism. So, and I feel that ambition myself. I still feel it. And I do have part of me that has part of my identity is connected with being a business owner. And yet it's evolved in such a way that it's not defining me the way it used to. It's part of something that I love and I'm passionate about, but like the business can change, the environment can change, whatever I'm doing can change. And I'm not going to have my world rocked because of that, the way I would have 10 years ago, for instance. So, you know, it can be part of us, but having that drive can be helpful. And like you said, it can also be harmful. So the chasing, I definitely used to, I actually did a podcast episode myself. I don't know, sometime earlier this year or maybe last year, I don't remember when it was, about being a wisdom seeker. I had that phrase come to mind one day and I added it to all my social media profiles and stuff because I was like, gosh, and I talked about how I used to really chase things. And like you said too, there's kind of that adrenaline rush and that high and that dopamine hit of having accomplished something, reached a goal, get the money, hire the person, do the thing. And yet it's pretty fleeting, isn't it? Because then we're like, well, okay, now where's the next thing I got to chase? Because that didn't last too long and I got to go after this thing now. So that chasing, I found for many of us, ends up catching up with us and gets exhausting. And eventually we're looking around our age, as you said, yep, I'm late 40s. I'm just a couple of years older than you. And I would say it's in this last decade in my 40s that I have come to realize, like, I don't want to chase. I want to do cool stuff, but I want to make sure it's feeling good the whole time or most of the time, and not just go for that fleeting moment of satisfaction. Like, how can I change my life so that I feel satisfied most of the time already? So it's not, so for me, it's kind of like living, and if you're listening to the, obviously you can't see my hands right now, but I'm kind of drawing kind of a straight line with, you know, or kind of a bar going across horizontally. I want to live kind of in this emotional zone because I found that the roller coaster ride, the big highs, the big lows is really rough on my nervous system and rough on my clients' nervous systems. And it's not really sustainable for a healthy life. And I want a life that's more calm. I want more peace. I want more peace of mind. And that feels satisfying to me in a longer way. It's not these moments. And that feels so much better. And then there I'm able to be more present. I'm able to communicate calmer, avoid certain discussions that used to get into arguments and all these things about being right or wrong or having my way versus the other person, all that stuff. Everything feels easier because I'm in a more stable, peaceful zone most of my days. And that is worth so much to me. Now, does that mean that I don't have ambition anymore? No. Does it mean that I don't want to go after things and accomplish some more cool stuff? No. But it's coming from a place that feels, like I said, calm and peaceful. A coach I like to follow, her name's Martha Beck, someone that I've not worked with personally, but I like to follow her. She has this phrase, I am meant to live in peace. And I love that. And it's like, I believe, and I've seen for myself and clients too, that we can live in peace and still create and grow and do cool stuff in the world and do cool stuff with our businesses and with our work. We can make an impact and we can make changes. But like you said, so for me, for instance, I look at the world, I'll read the news from a reliable source that I feel good about. If I find something gets me extra, you know, flared up or feels, you know, I may not read all the details if I find it's going to really have an effect on me that moment, but I want to pay attention to what's going on. And then I come back to, okay, I can impact the world by like every person I come in contact with, and there's a ripple effect. My coach actually taught me that for every person that I work with, there's at least 1,000 people that will be affected, impacted positively by that because of the ripple effect of that change and what it does. That is awesome. And that shows me, and we each have the power to change the world and impact the world by one person at a time. So or even just me, you know, putting out a podcast, I'm talking at one moment, technically to nobody, and yet I put it out there and I trust that the people who need to hear it will hear it or find it at the right time for them. And then it will have an effect on them. And then that will affect other people around them. And then that will affect other people around those people. So that, I do believe that we can change the world, ironically, by tightening our vision of how we do it and focusing more at a micro level on just what's around us, that we can have a huge power. So that's what I've done, at least.
That's awesome. And basically, like what you're saying is, let's say you're a leader and you run a team of, you know, you have an employees of 30, 40 employees. And if you impact that leader, those 40 employees will be changed. And those 40 employees, then their families will be changed. And that ripple effect can have 1,000 people impacted. And you don't necessarily need to be the CEO. You could be even the analyst that just starts, but then your mother's happy because you're happy, or whatever that impact is around your family as well.
Yeah. And to take that example just a little step further, think about how many hours people are in their jobs. So if you've got people under you and they're spending a lot of time at their work, but you have shifted even in the way you see something so that you react differently to the next situation, and maybe in a way that surprises someone and is supportive, because like you're maybe less reactive emotionally, you're like calmer and you're able to see a new idea or recognize them for their great idea that they had or their input or something. And like you said, that will have a ripple effect, and it is pretty phenomenal what can happen. And I think we unfortunately dismiss or don't give ourselves credit for the impact we can have on the people around us. And I think I'd like to invite everyone to really consider that.
Wow. And what are, let's say if someone's going through a hard time right now, like they're not doing well financially, like they've lost their job, or they're trying to start a business and it's not working. They've gone through a divorce or a relationship breakup, or they've, maybe not even passed some exams. What are some tips and tricks that you would say to them to get them to feel better about life and be more positive when they're going through such a hard time?
I would say when the feelings start coming up that feel uncomfortable and those repetitive thoughts and, you know, that you're just, that is, that you feel is knocking you down, try the, what I referred to earlier, the positive intelligence tip, what's referred to as PQ reps. All it is focusing on one sense for at least 20 seconds. If you can do a few minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, the more, the better, to help calm you. And then you're going to be able to be in a state of being able to recognize the next best step for you, to be able to recognize an opportunity that might present itself in front of you and be like, ooh, that could help me right now, or to go look up how to get support in whatever your situation is. So that's one thing. Another is try to switch your focus on anything, even the tiniest thing that feels good in your life right now, or that, like, I love birds. I love listening to birds. So no matter how crappy I could feel in a moment, if I focus and listen to those birds or watch those birds outside, there's something that helps soothe me. So you've got to learn how to self-soothe. And then that can switch things for you and change what's going on inside of you, which then can change your outer reality. Maybe it's even, you know, something simple like making your favorite cup of coffee the way you like it, or getting it at a store, or a certain cup of tea, taking a moment to savor that and be grateful for that in the moment, and just trying to find, because when you can put that energy, switch your energy to have a moment of gratitude, a moment of appreciation for something good in your life. Again, as seemingly simple as a cup of coffee or tea, or your favorite mug or your favorite glass, use that. Whatever could make you switch a little bit of your brain for a little bit of time, and then you practice doing that more and more and more and more. Those are some ways to help. And then, of course, I also recommend finding someone to follow. Check out my podcast. Find a book that jumps out at you that could be, you know, if you like to read, or maybe I'm an auditor. I like to listen to books, listen to podcasts. Find some that are uplifting, something that's going to help you through this time. There's so many resources out there, but if you're just trying to rely on yourself to somehow power through this and get over it, it could be a long road. It could be a pretty rough road. And there's a lot of resources out there and a lot of free resources. So take advantage of that, of the technology that we've got. And instead of endlessly scrolling social media and seeing the highlight reel of all the people's lives that might make you feel worse, go find something uplifting to listen to, watch, or read, and see how that can switch things for you.
Yeah, and I really like your website, charisyourlife.com, which has your podcast, and it has material that you can go through that will help people in their, you know, uplift them in their life. Now, what is it in, like, California that makes it lead the world, even in this coaching arena? You know, is it that people you're surrounded by are into self-development? You know, it's one of those, like, leaders of the world on personal development, or that might be a perception that I have, but, you know, people like Tony Robbins to Brian Tracy, like all these people that I've been following for decades, they all seem to come from California, not even just US, but California. You also live there. What is it about the place that you think it attracts a certain type of person, or that it's just a wealthy place? Because, I read if it was a country by itself, it would be the fifth biggest economy in the world. What is it that drives people to be into personal development more so than a lot of other parts of the world?
Yeah, interesting you point that out. My coach is in California as well, and the founder of my coaching program. And actually, both of the modalities I mentioned, fearless living and positive intelligence, both of the owners, founders, California. I had not put that together until you said that just now. And so that's really interesting. I'm really glad. That's just kind of fascinating. So I originally grew up in Washington State, which is still on the West Coast for anybody that's not in the US. It's two states up from California in the corner of the main mainland. And yet I moved here with my husband when he was going to dental school. We met an undergrad university, and he was from here. And then he wanted to really come back here. And so we found our way back here through all his schooling and everything. And I really enjoyed it too. I think it does attract people who are willing to go deep and explore internally. And I think there's a little bit of, just the concept of like attracts like. I think that is at play here. However it started, but then the more of people like that that it has, then more people attract to that. And those people, if you follow law of attraction, any of those kinds of concepts in general and in life, that I do believe there's some merit to. You know, I do believe that we tend to connect with and attract people not always exactly the same as us, but kind of similar in certain ways, or kind of in a certain similar wavelength at the time in our life, kind of a similar thoughts or similar energies and that they kind of put out. Like, you know, when you walk into a room and it just like the vibe, you're like, this is not a fit for me. And you make it a short visit or just don't even walk in, like to that party or that thing. And you're like, I'm going to just make my appearance and get out of here. Whereas you could walk into another room and be like, yeah, these are my people. And you stay there for 5 hours. So it's kind of like that. I think that people have just kind of been attracted to one another, connected, and then it's brought. And you'll find that in any pockets of area where if there's kind of similarities that happen. So I think it's just happened that over time, more and more people who are really willing to do a deep dive and then help others do the deep dive. Because if you look at the background of some of those names you mentioned, and my coach included, there's some rough times they had. There's some serious crap they went through in their life that got them to the point where they're now helping others. There's some serious stuff in those stories. If you do some research in the backstories of all these people, they didn't just happen to become a coach and, you know, have some method. Their methods came about because they went through miserable circumstances in their life. So I think that it's just happened and kind of magnetically attracted certain people. But I love what the internet offers us to be able to do, like what I'm doing now, and reach out. I mean, and I know you have quite a following that's outside of the US. And even when I look at my podcast, I'm pleasantly surprised to see people in other countries that have found me. I'm like, how did you find me? Somebody emailed me from India and says, I'm like one of your biggest fans and thank you for doing this. And I was like, great. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you were saying about, like, sometimes when I'm going through a particularly hard time in life and I think I can't stand this pain or whatever it is going through, and then I think that will make me a better teacher and coach in the future, because I can help more people that have gone through it. If you've never been broke, it's hard to relate with people that have that don't have money. Or if you've never failed in business, it's hard to relate with people that have, you know, just been successful from day one. So that's really positive things. So that's great, Charis. And your coaching, you do a lot of it online now. With people around the world, they can access you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm some in-person things, but most of the time it's virtual, usually through Zoom calls. And I have an online course, a program that people can do at their own time. So the time zone doesn't matter at all. They can be, you know, halfway across the world from me and be listening to my recordings while I'm asleep, and I can be helping them. So of course, there's the podcast, which is free and out there, called Cherish Your Life. And I'm sure the show notes will have my name, but just a little tip, you spell and say my name similar to the city Paris, but with a CH. And so Cherish Your Life is the name of my podcast, and it's a weekly podcast. And then I've got an online course that I mentioned that is go at your own pace, pre-recorded videos. And then I do monthly calls connected with that, where you can attend live or you can watch recordings, and that's called Busy to Balanced. And then I've got, I do a limited amount of one-on-one coaching and group coaching, you know, with people that is live over Zoom, and that you can connect with me and see if I have availability at the time that you're interested. I have an application process to go through, just a form to fill out to tell me a little bit more about yourself, see if I think we're a good fit. And then we can go from there if I've got room in my schedule and you want to connect and chat with me and see if I can help you.
Amazing. CherishYourLife.com. How else can people connect with you, or is the main way to check you out on your website?
Website's great. If you scroll down just a little bit on the homepage, you'll see a little 5-minute video of me telling my story, which is actually one of the first things I know Amir saw. And so that is a great way to get to know a little bit more about my background. And then that has the links to the podcast and everything else. On all social media, my handle is at Cherish Your Life. So you can find me everywhere that way as well. And of course, you can also send me a DM, and I reply to all my own DMs, and you can contact me through the website too. So there's one way or another you can find me. Now there's, if you want to opt in to get my newsletter, you can scroll to the bottom of my homepage to opt in for that. And I also, at the top of my homepage and multiple spots on my website, there's an option to sign up to get a free video training that I have called How to Live Life on Your Own Terms and Timeline and Ditch Life's Guilt and Anxiety and Finally Find More Peace of Mind. So you can also get that and get that free training from me, and then start getting weekly emails, hearing about my podcast and in my blog and what I got going on, and continue to learn from me.
Awesome. There's some great insights. If you do follow Cherish yourlife.com, you'll get some great insights from someone who's lived life through the journey that we all go through. And you can get her insights from learning from so many other coaches, from our own experience, which will really help anyone out, whether they're dealing with guilt or anxiety or whatever that thing in life, that challenge. Because there's someone who's an expert, and Cherish is one of them that you can resonate with. So Cherish, thank you so much for your time. So Cherish Santilli from CherishYourLife.com. And this has been Amir and Zor. Thanks for your time.